You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. This is a very special episode. And I don't say that often, do I? But I've been alone for months now, months on end. And, hey there, lonely boy. Yeah, it's been a lonely time. And I've been, as you know, bitching sometimes about like, Ryan, God, you know, but I understand it's obviously social distancing. So I make fun, but kidding around because I know that Ryan can't be here. But today, Ryan is back.
I've come back
safely. And this is
merch,
cheap promotion. I brought him back. Inside of You mask still available on the Inside of You online store, along with new mugs. Look at these babies. You gotta just boom.
Those are pretty sweet.
I don't. Right? Aren't they awesome? They're new colors, and you know, and they're available autographed too.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I want to thank everybody out there for all the birthday wishes. I've said this before. I posted on Instagram, and holy shit, man! This guy felt loved. I honestly started reading them. I took like a couple hours to read them, and I teared up, and I was like, you know, I get in my head, I get in like, you know, who really likes you? Who really loves you? I mean, come on. You always feel like you're alone. And then you read these comments and people took the time and you're like, come on, man. Some people like you. And I think it's important to take that in and just say, hey, this is nice. This is good. And feel it and be grateful. And you know, that was nice. You just brought over a gift. You brought some rum. I got a kiddie pool out back, and you got me some floaty for drinks, and you got me. So, I'm going to be naked in a kiddie pool. Former movie star, TV star, Michael Rosenbaum ends up in a kid's mini pool.
Oh, geez.
Oh God. Wouldn't that be just
if
awesome?
That's where we find you.
I mean, by the way, that would be, if I'm going to go that way, my friends would have a field day at the wake. You know, they'd be like, fuck Rosenbaum, you know? It sucks that he's gone, but fuck, you know, to die in a kiddie pool. I mean, it doesn't get worse than that.
We always said he was a kid at heart.
That's right.
And his kid heart exploded in the pool. What are you looking for?
My drink, my water.
Oh
that's right here.
Yeah.
This is one of these inside of you things, but that's just for
just endless merch here.
Certain patrons. But we got a great guest today. Great, 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 great guest. A lot of great guests coming up. Honestly, there's some good stuff. I got just a text from someone I've been trying to get on the show for a long time. And he's a big comic guy, probably the biggest one of them. Again, thank you for listening to all my patrons out there who support the podcast. Endless love. And that's the Inside of You on Patreon. And the new horror patron. Thank you to everybody on there who's joining us. It's a horror club. We Zoom. We do these things. It's where have all the good horror movies gone with John Heater, who's Napoleon, and myself. So that's cool. Nothing to really report other than, you know, got the online store and, doing the podcast and, you know, writing a lot. That's what I'm doing. What are you doing out there? I hope, you're living the best life you can right now and doing the best you can and kind of, I don't know, fuck, it's just brutal. But, anyway, thanks for supporting the podcast and make sure you follow us. Inside of You at Inside of You Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and at Inside of You Pod on Twitter, and I'm at the Michael Rosenbaum on Instagram. And you know, subscribe, tell all your friends, do all that stuff. You know how it is; it really helps the show. And write a review, do whatever you want. And thank you. So why don't we do it right now? Why don't we get to our first guest first? Well, you were sort of my first guest. It should you know, this could be the second guest. You're the preamble, is that
prologue?
The prologue. I think it would be the prologue. Let's do this. This was a great interview. I'm not saying I was so great, but this was I had his wife on the show a couple months ago, Marina Baccarin. And I'll tell you, I read a lot about Ben McKenzie, and it said he's kind of private, shy, doesn't talk a lot. And I got some good stuff here, man. And I didn't feel like I was, you know, interrogating the guy, Ryan, but it felt good. It felt like, you know, he texted me after and said, hey, man, said some nice things, and he called me a great host. Whatever, man. It's cool. But it was fun. It was open. He got, I think, you know, he talks about his anxiety and talks about having just, it was cool. So why don't we just fucking do it? Let's get inside of Ben McKenzie.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
Ben, why are you in Connecticut?
We rented a house to get out of the city months ago, and we kind of loving it over here. We're gonna be here for the end of the month. I don't know, New York was so crazy for so long.
Do you like it?
But yeah, it's great. I can, it's got like, has Marina told you any of this? Probably not.
No.
You guys haven't seen each other in a flash since.
I like this.
Yeah, we've got 60 acres.
Jeez.
It's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous, and the kids are loving it.
Well, you and I have something in common. I saw a above ground pool. I was so hot, not like in a sexy way, but I was just really just, it's humid. It's 100 degrees. I just needed to dip into something. And so I ordered online a pool, above ground pool for, I think it was $289. It's 2 feet deep. It's 8 feet long. It's 5.5 feet wide. My buddy Tom and Tom came over, you know, we distance, wore a mask, and we built this little pool. And I'll tell you, it's one of the best things I've ever done. It's so refreshing to just take a dip in it's pretty much a bath.
Yeah, if it's 2 feet deep, how does one physically relax? Do you just starfish it out?
Well, this is pretty cool. I text my friends pictures of this pool. And so for my birthday, my friend Stacy and Hal bought me a Millennium Falcon raft. That actually is the size of the pool. So I lie on that thing, and I'm telling you, it feels right. I'm not even kidding around. I know it sounds funny and it looks corny. It's definitely not a movie star pool. Not that I'm a movie star, but you know, you think, oh, this guy, he's done some work and he's in Hollywood. He's got to have a nice pool. I'm like, I have an above ground $289 pool. I'm a grown man, well, some would say. And that's how it goes.
Congratulations on your birthday, by the way.
Oh, thanks, dude. You know, I felt good. It's really weird. You know, people say, hey, you know, don't get caught up in social media. Don't, you know, obviously I have a podcast and you have to be a little social and all these things, but it was overwhelming. It was like just the responses. And I think if you just take time, I took like an hour and just read responses and just, it was just so sweet. Everybody was just, you know, it's nice. It's nice to take a minute and go, hey man, you know, people like you. Some people like you. I think it's important to just take a sit back and say, hey, man, you know, because I'm very critical of myself. Are you?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I had a similar experience on it's been almost a year. My birthday's in September. But yeah, just taking stock and just saying, hey, something's working because some people like me and that's nice. And usually I find no matter how bad the internet is, it doesn't, people don't actually go out of their way to criticize you on your birthday.
Yeah. Well,
happy birthday, you fucktard or whatever.
I mean, some people do.
Usually, sometimes.
There's been people, yeah, well, people in office, people, you know, on their birthday things. I mean, things do happen. I don't do political stuff on this, but, you know, yeah, look, do you get caught up in that stuff? Can you read 10 great comments and all of a sudden someone says, I hate your Detective Gordon and it just ruins your day?
Yeah, it used to be, I think, much more that way. I remember getting really caught up in that when I first started working, which was basically the OC, which was, you know, God, this is a long, long time ago. But I remember like, oh, I remember the first time, like, oh, I'll just go to the message board. It was at that point, it was like, you go to the website for the OC and there was a message board. Like, And you look at it and you're like, oh, that person, oh, that's so great. Oh, awesome. Oh, this is so cool. And then one person. And I remember getting really bent out of shape about it. And that lasting for a while. And then at some point, just going, this is useless. Why am I wasting all of this time and energy? And I will never be satisfied because one person's criticisms will outweigh, you know, 100 people's positive comments. So just chuck it and stop. Weirdly enough, though, social media, which obviously didn't exist back then, has taken off and is even more of that stuff. But I don't know why it is. I don't have a lot of people talking junk. And if they do, my only rule is just never respond to them. Never talk. Never take the bait of anybody because they're only going to drag you down, you know? And I will say, as hard as that is, if you stick to that and you don't respond, then you forget about it quickly. And then it's just like, You know what I mean? Just keep moving. Like none of that stuff really registers.
I mean, it never, you know, if you think about it, you take away social media, you just keep rewinding all the way back to your first play or the first time you're on stage or whatever it was. And it's still that, you know, one of the other actors who you think is a good actor or somebody else. And like, you know, people talk and we always care. We want people to like us. We want people to think we're good. We want them to validate us. And that's where it starts. And I think that especially if you don't have a good upbringing where it's like, hey, you're good enough, kid, and you're loved, that can really go nuts. And that social media stuff, then by the time you get there, you're completely fucked. And So, I mean, you had a good upbringing, though, for the most part, no?
Yeah, I did. And it was completely divorced of any, it wasn't Hollywood on any level. I grew up in Texas. Dad's a lawyer. My mom she's now a poet, but she at the time was like trying to run some charitable organizations. They were very, you know, I think they raised us to write, you know, relatively speaking. Certainly wasn't anything where I don't think we felt overpraised or underpraised. I think we felt, you know, sort of like treated like, you know, as long as we were doing what we were supposed to be doing, broadly speaking, we were always loved. As long as we were doing what we're supposed to be doing, broadly speaking, we were encouraged to do it. But yeah, I you know, because I've worked with obviously young people who, when I was started the OC, I had already gone to college. I was the oldest of the cast members, and I think that was also helpful for me too, because then I had some perspective, you know.
Right.
It was like I'd graduated high school. I graduated college. I had struggled in New York for a minute. I'd come to LA. You know, so I was in my early or almost even mid 20s by the time the show started. A little old to be playing high school student, but whatever.
Isn't that the story of TV? Look at Smallville.
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord. Welling is playing a high school freshman, and Jensen's the football coach who's got a relationship with Kristen Krug's character, Lana Lang. And it's just like, man, these guys are grown men, really. And Beverly Hills 90210, I mean, that's just kind of the way it is.
Totally. And I mean, it does bear some, I think it's worth noting, you know, because I think I do remember having that experience of like, this is pretty weird that we're making them. And it really was the men or the boys, whatever you want to call us, were considerably older than the girls. Like, Adam Brody and I were in our early 20s. I think we're a year apart. And Misha and Rachel were younger. And it was like, this is a weird thing that we're like perpetuating some weird stereotype of like what masculinity is supposed to look like and what femininity is supposed to look like. It's very strange.
I mean, how much younger were they than you and Adam?
I don't really remember. I mean, I remember Misha being very young, like 17 or 18 years old. Rachel, I don't remember. I want to say she's like maybe 4 years younger than me or something. Maybe she was 20. I was the only cast member who had been to college. I think Adam had done a semester or something and was like, screw this. I don't want to do this. I want to move to LA and become an actor. And he'd already done like a series. And he had the most, I think he had, well, Misha had credits and he had the second most credits. But I was the only one who'd actually like gone to college, gotten a degree. And not that LA could have cared at all about that. You know, no one cares about
it. But for your growth, though, for your growth, that was important.
Perspective, that I had perspective of, you know, this is cool. This is weird. It's weird that we're on a television show that you happen to get on a television show that happened to take off and is pushing you out there. The marketing campaign has taken over and is pushing you out in a certain way. That's a weird experience. It was helpful for me to have some perspective to say, this is strange. It's okay to feel strange. It's okay to like notice that. Cause I think otherwise you can get caught up in it and get, it can be some weird, you know, never ending quest for validation or something that like, you know, because inevitably, however hot you're burning at the moment, you're never going to stay that hot. Right.
Like, oh yeah.
You know what I mean? The show lasts for, I think that one lasted, Smallville lasted forever. The OC lasted 4 years, you know, it's like, it was hot and you have to be able to ride that out. You know, you have to be able to like make sense of your life when the lights are not on.
Oh yeah.
Or you're you're gonna make yourself miserable. What was small? We've actually never talked about this. What was Smallville like in terms? I'm sure you've asked this question a million times.
We were lucky. Like, we were lucky with all this stuff because we were filming in Vancouver. We were away from everything. Social media hadn't hit yet, so we were like, we didn't realize how big we were, and that was a good thing. I had done some things, but I wasn't famous. Someone goes, "Oh, you were on that show, Zoe, Dick, John, Jake, and George, or something," and I'm like, oh yeah, or they, think I was on another show, and they sort of recognized, but I wasn't. But and then when that show hit, I mean, I stuck out like a sore thumb. I'm playing Lex Luthor. I'm bald. So yeah, I mean, it was. But we were away. We were in Vancouver and constantly working. And so when I came back, I would notice. I would notice some things like, oh, this is. And I remember, by the way, I was the oldest one in the cast besides the parents. So out of all the kids, I was 26, 27 when I got Smallville, and. I mean, yeah, my life changed, but thank God I wasn't Tom's age 5 years earlier, or Kristen, who was 18, or because I might have gone off the rails. I just like, holy shit, I'm famous. And I would have. I mean, there were times when I think I went off the rails just in general. I didn't have a good head on my shoulder, even though I never did anything really bad. I always knew this isn't the right thing to do. I'm not doing that. But, I still would get in trouble, like in terms of like, I would do, I did a little drugs, probably. I'm questioning what I just said.
Exactly. Yeah.
I did drugs, yeah. Probably.
No,
right.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Did I do drugs, Ben? No, I did some drugs. I'm an urban legend. We did some drugs, and I had never done ecstasy before, and everybody was doing it. We didn't shoot for a week, and I got it's like, oh my god, I've never felt this good before, and then I've never felt this worse in my life the next day. So, but I knew, like, hey. I don't have an addictive personality like, some people in my family and my friends. And so I never had that problem. Thankfully, if I did, I could be dead.
Sure.
But do you think because the OC, all of a sudden you're like Ben McKenzie, right?
Right. There was a big marketing campaign. There was a big marketing campaign behind it. And I just remember shooting it that summer or shooting the pilot in the spring and the series as soon as they could possibly build the sets and write the scripts. That summer, and the marketing campaign came on in like August, and they were super smart. They marketed it through like malls and summer festivals and stuff, and got the show on before school had even started up. So when kids were still like wrapping up their summer, and that like nostalgic, summer's ending, we're going to go back to school, but we're starting to hang out together. We've taken our family vacations and we're back like in the towns we were going to go to school, and it just took off like wildfire, and it was weird. It was a strange.
Did you ever look in the mirror? Go ahead.
Well, the image that I'll remember, and I wish I had it up, but maybe you guys can find it and put it up later, is they took these like pixelated headshot thingies. Like they took images that were of us, and then they totally photoshopped the living shit out of them. And mine was. I was the bad boy. And so I had like the wife beater and the hoodie on, and I had a choker chain, which lasted like an episode or two, which was hilarious. But the funniest part about it was, so I was like 23, 24 years old, and they pixelated facial hair. They pixelated like, they made me look like I had a 5 o'clock shadow.
They added facial hair to you.
Yeah, like pixelated, like 5 o'clock. Like
okay.
5 o'clock. I looked like George Michael. I looked like me combined with George Michael. And it was the weirdest thing where I was like, oh, I see. Like, it makes sense why you would do that. It's not me. It doesn't look like me at all.
Find
like,
that picture,
as you can
Ryan.
Tell from me having shaved this morning, like, I can grow a beard actually, but like when I shave, I look like a baby. I am a
and they wanted to toughen you up a little bit. Ryan,
yeah,
make sure
they wanted
me
to look edgy, but also metrosexually George Michael-y in a weird way. It's
right.
Very strange.
Who was sexy? I had great facial hair.
Let's be honest.
So
handsome. Yeah.
But did you look in the mirror? Were you sort of like, when you saw that, were you like, did you kind of embrace it? Like, yeah, I'm cool.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious. And, I got a ton of grief from my family about it, which is great. Like, that's exactly what your family should do, is just like make fun of you. And, but then, yeah, for sure. I mean, then also like a cute girl would look at you and you're like, yeah, sure. That's that's me. Hi.
I'm Ben. Where's your facial hair? Well,
let's not talk about that. it was a funny time, man. That's why. I mean, when we were in, I mean, I take your point about being in Vancouver really well, because we were not, right? We were right in LA. We were right in the heart of LA.
Oh, yeah.
And I think proudly so, right? That was the whole gist of the show and the marketing campaign behind it. And I think that, you know, definitely contributed to some weird times, man.
Were you going out? Were you going out on the weekends? Were you going to clubs? Were you like, they giving you tables? Ben McKenzie, we got a table for you in the back. We got some great news. Whatever you want.
I definitely did do that sometimes, but I also hate spending money like that. Like, I just can't. I'm like, you want me to spend how much money for a bottle of booze that costs $50? Like, you've got
to
be kidding.
They didn't give that to you free? Come on, Ben.
No, so that's the thing, is like, you would always do that thing of like, well, what are we talking about? You know, so I just remember being the Midwestern or Southern or whatever Texas boy in me was like, I'm not going to pop in bottles at club. Like, I'll freeload a little bit, but I'm not gonna.
I do like free things. I'm not gonna lie. But did you ever have? Obviously, you're married to one of the most beautiful women on the planet, inside out. By the way, if people don't know her, they look at her and like, oh my God, she's stunning. But when you meet her, she's unbelievable, and you know that because you're married to her. But did you ever have fans that you're like, I kind of want to go out with this fan? Have you ever gone out with a fan?
I don't know that, you know, it's so interesting. It's such an interesting time in your 20s when I think no one really knows who they are. We're all trying to like latch on to, and even outside of the celebrity dumb and the entertainment industry, like your average 20-year-old or 20-something-year-old is trying to figure out who they are. And so you combine, you're trying to figure yourself out. They or the other person is also trying to figure themselves out. So there's a lot of like not talking about those things that then get revealed, you know, relatively quick.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're a fan. I didn't realize that was the way that, okay, all right, fair enough. Like, this is, I think that dynamic is not sustainable, right? Because then it's not a level playing field, you know. There are all these assumptions that are being made on behalf of you know, whoever you might be spending time with that are not usually borne out by the truth. The main assumption being that you're cool somehow. That you're somehow like
they think you're cool, and you're always like, I'm not as cool, and you're going to see that. I'm never as really cool as any role I've played, ever. Exactly. Ever. I'm not as rich as they are. I'm not as smart as they are. I'm definitely not as cool as they are. But I will say, Jason Priestley, his wife, they've been married forever. They have kids. What a relationship. She was a fan, I believe.
No way.
I believe really. She was a fan, and they fell in love. So it does happen.
Yeah. I'm not saying it couldn't work. I should have been that. I'm just saying it never worked for me. It always felt like weird. But I think there's a thin line between like fandom and like, oh, I dig what you're doing. I like what you're doing. I respect what you're doing. And, you know, I mean, it's not a black and white thing necessarily. I mean, obviously, Morena, huge fan of my work. Obviously, that's why we're together.
Of course. By the way, let me jump into that real quick. You're on set. When was it? Was it day one where I'm just going to be the voice of Ben McKenzie's mind? Like there was a show called Inside Herman's Head where you could hear all the voices.
Yeah, love Inside
Herman's Head. Love that show. Now, when you saw Morena the first time, was the inside voice going, holy shit, she's beautiful? Or did it take sort of time before you guys, was it very professional? Was it very, I'm sure it was professional, you're professional, but when was the moment where you're like, huh, I can't get her out of my head, or she can't get you out of hers?
I don't know when that happened exactly. I do remember the first time I saw her, which was she was cast very quickly in the middle of the first season because the construction of the show was that I was supposed to be with Barbara Keene. James Gordon was supposed to be with Barbara Keene. All the fanboys out there are like, yeah, of course, we know all about this. but it was weird. It just didn't quite work because they'd set up Barbara to be this rich girl who lived in, you know, a penthouse in Gotham City, and but Gordon was supposed to be the everyman, and it just didn't quite have the romantic
the pop.
Yeah, and it was through no fault of Aaron Richards playing the character, and they ultimately did what they should have done, which is turn Barbara into a villain, and that's where she went, and that's that tension sort of underlaid their relationship moving forward. But they needed a new object of affection and a real romance that could sort of like underpin the show from a romantic standpoint. So she was cast. I remember it was like October. Yeah, I remember what day it was exactly. It was October 22nd. And for reasons that will become clear soon. And it was raining. It was a miserable day. We were shooting in like some pretty rough area of the Bronx, I want to say. Raining, cats and dog. We were inside, thankfully, but she showed up for makeup and hair tests and maybe some camera tests because she was going to shoot the next week. For some reason, they needed her that day in order to get everything right. And I was filming some other stuff, and the executive producer conspired. He told me that she wanted to meet me and talk to me, and he told her that I wanted to talk to her. Anyway, I was in my trailer and I got a knock on the door and I opened it up and she's standing there in the rain. And normally you would think like, oh, romantic, like, but instead it was just this drenched rain. She looked like something was wrong. Something was clearly wrong. And I was like, other than just her being soaked, and I was like, oh, come in. And we had a little small talk, but slowly there's something going on. I was like, you know, you don't mind me asking, like, are you okay? And she was like, yeah. And she did that thing on Marina, you know,
tough Marina.
Like, she's sort of like, she's tough chick.
Yeah, I'm fine.
You're like, what happened? Like, my mom died or something. You're like, whoa, okay. No, she, no. Sorry.
Yeah, I know.
Since her mom is alive and well. Vera Seta.
He's just Ben.
He's in Brazil. She goes, yeah, no, it's just, it's my son's birthday today. And I was like, oh my God, that you flew out on your son's birthday. Oh my God. Yeah. They're like, they needed me today. And da, da, da. I was like, oh man, I'm so sorry. How old is he? And I'm thinking, I'm like assuming he's like of a certain age. And even though she's very young, I'm like, he's one. I was like, I'm sorry, you missed your son's first birthday because you had to be here.
Why did you say that, Ben? Why'd you rub it in? No, I know.
No, not accusatorily. Like, I can't believe they made you do that. No offense. Like,
of course.
I mean, Warner Brothers, God love you. Like, seriously, you couldn't let her have a day? And she's clearly heartbroken by it. And she went back to, she flew out that night to go back to be with him for his party. But it was this like very human moment. It was just a very human moment. So that's how it started. It started with she's a human being. I'm a human being. She is actually in deep discomfort, but sucking it up to do a job, which I thought was like, you know, both sort of tragic, but also commendable, right? Like she's doing what she has to do to do her thing. So yeah, that's how it started. I don't remember the exact, you know, ins and outs of the rest of it.
I mean, you had never been married before.
No.
I mean, have you lived with women before? Mm-mm. So not only have you not lived with women, a woman,
yes,
never been married. So this is all brand new. Boom. You eventually move in together. You have a kid and you get married. I mean, this is life changing. How old are you?
Let's see. I guess I would have been about 35, I guess.
35 years old. Were you ready for this, or were you trying to act confident going, yeah, this is gonna be great, I'm so ready, and then at night you're just having anxiety?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think there are all different kinds of guys, but there's certainly, I don't know if you can relate to this, probably not, but you know, you get to you get to a certain age and you're like, dating is super fun when you're in your 20s, and in your 30s can be cool, but it can also start to be a real drag at a certain point.
Kill me now. Yeah, seriously, dude, come on. Yeah, go on. I'm here, I'm listening, and I'm absorbing.
Yeah, you're listening. Yeah. And I was definitely in that category by the time I met her, where I was like, all right, don't really feel like I have a lot of energy here to like try and find the one after. I mean, I was in LA for 13 years prior to being in New York, and I found dating in LA really challenging. Not that I didn't meet some wonderful women and form some great relationships, but difficult climate I felt to date in. And New York, I was working so hard. It was that first year of the show, and as the lead of the show, like I was shooting every day, and so I had no time to do it. But behind that, I was definitely ready, in the sense that I was sick and tired of not having anyone to share this stuff with. Like I was like, you climb a hill, and then you climb another hill and another hill, and you're getting up on these higher and higher hills, and you're looking around. There's no one to like, hey, this is cool. I'm on top of. Look at where I got to, and there's no one there. And you're like, oh, this is kind of lonely, actually. Was how my experience anyway.
No, it's an amazing thing. I just think, you know, and by the way, working together, you know, have you in your past, like it's got to be different. I mean, have you dated a lot of actresses, or do you feel like, you know, this is like, it's nice to date someone who's out actually making money too?
Right.
You know?
I definitely had dated actresses. I dated non-actors. I think at the time I'd basically given up, you know, in terms of like trying to find someone serious, and I just wasn't really trying very hard. And I think if you had told me, you know, prior to meeting her, like, oh, you know, you should be with an actor, I would have said, I think I probably shouldn't. I think that would probably a bad idea. But you know what I mean? For all the reasons that we can go into, but most of them are self-explanatory, you know? Yeah. But with Morena, I felt like, you know, it's someone who stands on her own 2 feet, who provides for herself, but is also not easily threatened, is not easily like, you know, there's a lot of things that go into two actors being together. And there's all, I remember somebody saying this to me a long time ago, that two actors' careers are never moving at the same speed in the same direction at the same time. Like our careers are always on these like crazy roller coastery things.
Right.
And so then you have two of them, and it's like this, you know, and so that you got to find, if you're going to do it with somebody else who happens to be in the same line of work, you've got to find someone who's like self-confident enough to not get angry when you're getting too big. Or take it personally when you get sensitive about that. You know what I mean? Like we both have to have.
Yeah, that can't be. That's got to be real difficult because, you know, you're going to do a new project, and then she's maybe not working, which is, by the way, it's back and forth, or she's doing the movie that just came out with Gerard Butler, and maybe you're not. So there's this ebb and flow and this kind of up and down thing. And then, well, I'm watching the kids. I'm tired. And there's a sort of, there has to be an open dialogue. And I assume, because I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, Ben, because I look at me, I'm 48 for God's sakes, and I have no one. I don't even have a fucking engineer in this room working with me. Ryan, damn it.
you know, look, man, there's days in which I envy your life. But you're right that there's this constant, you know, it's a partnership, right? On like on a certain level, not to be, I don't find that unromantic to call it that. I think that's sort of like part of like the main thing it becomes as you get older, is you just, and we're not that we're super old yet, but like even in a few years that we've been together or married, I, you know, you just like, you are constantly in the process of figuring out day to day, how it's going to go, who's going to take care of the kids, who's going to get this thing done in our shared life while also having time for your own thing. And it's like, it's full on, you know,
college did you right, boy.
What's that?
College done you right, boy. But I look at you, Ben, and I say this to certain guests because I'm like, wow, it just seems like you have your shit together. Have you ever dealt with anxiety or depression or things like that?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. I get, and Morena will attest to it. Like I get major anxiety. I have depression runs in my family, to a serious degree. I suffer from it at times. I try not to take medication. I don't find medication like the the antidepressants super helpful. You know, I'm very wary of them. But yeah, you know, I think it's very difficult to kind of what you're saying, right? Is like the very things that make you dynamic on screen, that make you desirous of more jobs and more experiences where you can do different things with sort of your talents. I mean this in the generic you, not you specifically.
Are the things
that also make you anxiety ridden and depressed at times, and you know what I mean? And it's impossible to separate those two things, and you question whether you would even want to if you could, right?
Absolutely.
If you could take that part out, maybe you'd be boring as sin on screen. Maybe you would be a really bad actor.
That's true. What do you do? Because a lot of my, you know, my guests, I think this show's become what it is because I think it's become something else that I didn't anticipate, which was more about, you know, talking to human beings, talking and seeing what makes each other tick, but also how we face adversity, what we do in certain situations, and everybody's different. So what you say you do to help maybe control your anxiety without, as you say, medication might help someone out there who goes, all right, I don't want to take medication. What does Ben do? Maybe I'll try that, you know? So what is it you do that maybe keeps things in check sometimes?
Yeah. And I should say I have a fear of being, I have a fear of being on medication, strong antidepressant medication. That does not mean it doesn't work for other people. And
right.
Without revealing people who they are, I have people very close to me in my life who are on medication and it's wonderful for them. And I think quite frankly, they don't think they could operate without it. So I'm not saying that people for whom it works should not do it or shouldn't be open to it, you know, especially if they have the right doctors who are advising them. For me, it's a lot of what you do. I mean, it's or what it sounds like you do is like, you know, it's getting, I'm most depressed when I'm sitting inside on my phone or on the computer. And obviously nowadays it's pretty hard to not get that way given the news cycle. So get out, get some exercise, take a walk, talk to a friend, you know, get out of your own head, man, and just get into, and I will say, it's hard with kids because kids need constant attention and constant love and support, but it's also great because kids snap you out of that pretty quick, right? Like you can't exist selfishly with children, you know, and look yourself in the mirror and think that you're even a halfway decent parent because you constantly have to, like, our kids are young, our kids are 6 and 4. You have to like feed them and, you know, clothe them and like play with them and teach them, like, you know, there's all that stuff. So that has just been super, super helpful.
Julius and Francis.
Yeah, Julius and Francis.
Do you feel like, do you ever, like, with your kids go, I just have to do this because I don't want to end up someday being called a bad dad? Like, I'm doing this because I just, as much as I love them, I'm doing it because I don't want to look like a bad father. I feel like I would do that a lot. Like, I'm fucking doing this because I don't want you 20 years going, you didn't do that.
Not only is that like perhaps the majority of parenting is doing things out of a sense of like parental guilt or future parental guilt, but they also know that too. Like, I feel like at a certain point early, like crazy early on, they're like, oh, I thought I can guilt them into doing this. Like, my daughter is so good at it. She's such a little, like, she knows that daddy's a softie and for her. And so she's like, she's 4, so she's like going through a natural progression in her development, but which is basically includes a lot of screaming, and crying, but it's also like, oh, daddy, please, if I just get that one episode of Paw Patrol or Rescue Riders, then like I promise I'll be good, you know. And at a certain point, you know, most of the time, I just accede to it and she wins, but at a certain point you gotta like draw a line or she'll just do it endlessly, like it'll never stop.
Inside of You is brought to you by Rocket Money. I love Rocket Money. You know why? Because everyone should have Rocket Money because it just helps you save money. How many times do we have subscriptions that we don't even know we have anymore and we're paying so much money? It's just throwing away money, Ryan.
I found one.
You did it. You told me I got Rocket Money.
I found one. I'm embarrassed to say how long it's been going on, but thank you for finding it. My God, it was embarrassing.
Yeah, because it's like you want to watch some show and you go, I have to subscribe to this this streaming whatever. Mm-hmm. And you start streaming the show, you watch it, you leave, and you forget after this trial period it kicks in and they're charging you $10 a month. It is embarrassing. Ugh. You know, 75% of people have subscriptions they've forgotten about. Before I started using Rocket Money, I thought I had, you know, like, oh, I have like 5 subscriptions. I could not believe it when they showed me I was paying for like 4 extra. Between, you know, streaming devices and fitness apps, delivery services, it's never ending. And thanks to Rocket Money, I'm no longer wasting money on the ones I forgot about. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features.
Rocket Money will even try to negotiate lowering your bills for you by up to 20%. All you have to do is submit a picture of your bill and Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They'll deal with the customer service for you. And I like that.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/inside. That's rocketmoney.com/inside. rocketmoney.com/inside.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Macy's, Adidas, Walmart, Nike, Wine.com, Samsung, Lenovo, Sephora, and more. And even stack sales on top of cashback. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Do you guys read lines to each other or is that weird?
Yeah, we have done. Yeah, for sure.
Is it weird? Do you feel like it's almost you're more nervous reading it to her than you are like on set?
Yeah, I'm not great with her. And of course, she is not fazed by it. She's so like practical and level-headed. And, you know, she'll have an audition that I'll be helping her with. And I'll hear myself when I say to her, it's so like, no, what about this? Try this. What about here? You know, and like stuff that would super offend me if she was saying it to me. And she's like, okay, yeah. And she just like sorts it through logically. She's like, no, I don't agree with that. But okay, well, I actually like that idea. All right, let me try it. And she does it. And it's like already, you know, better than it was before. And it was already good. And she just so like takes her ego out of it so easily. And I just can't do it. I'm like,
by the way, she saved me, I think, you know, when I was directing my little raunchy comedy back in 2013 or 14 or whatever. And you know, she comes to Indiana to do this little movie, $600,000 comedy. She's the lead with me. And she knows I'm exhausted. I'm directing every scene. I'm in every scene. And I've never met someone who is just so kind and got it and goes, I'm here for you. Whatever you need. Let's go.
Yeah.
This is awesome. I saw an interview with you and you talked about getting the role of Detective Gordon. And it was what made me think of this interview was when I got Lex Luthor, people asked me the questions like, did you watch Gene Hackman? Did you do the research? What did you do? And I thought, oh, this is kind of like, you know, I know that you were playing him younger though, like before, right? It's the earlier years.
Yeah.
So were you putting a lot of stress on yourself because you knew the fan base was so huge? And
well, sure, for sure. But that's like such a like vague pressure to put on yourself. Like, don't fuck this up. How? What's the specific thing? You know what I mean? And so the way I work is you definitely stress out about it. You definitely like just freak out. And then you go, okay, well, so that's like, that's probably undergirding everything for like multiple seasons, certainly the first season. But but then you go, all right, well, how do I channel this into something mildly productive? And then you go, it's actually a great scenario. And I will say, my conversations with Bruno Heller, who created Gotham, you know, who sort of, so the way this happened is, the year prior to Gotham, Bruno and I did a pilot for CBS, which never got picked up. It was me and Mandy Moore, actually.
Oh, she's so sweet.
She's awesome. She's a doll. And we hit it off, Bruno and I. The pilot didn't go, but I was under a deal at Warner Brothers after that. And unbeknownst to me, Bruno was writing Gotham, and they had sold it. And he called me, you know, the following, like January or February of the following year, and was like, hey, I wrote this part, you know, with you in mind, like, take a look at it. And I was like, that's cool. Like, that's, no one's ever written a part for me ever or since. Perhaps more telling. But like, you know, so I read it and I was like, wow, yeah, this is, you know, it was hard to argue against how cool the idea is. So much so that and I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, you might even do the same idea again if you wanted to do a cop show set in Gotham City. You could do it again even after you've done Gotham. Do you know about this?
No.
Yeah, okay. So what was cool about it, it was Bruno talked to me about how in some senses you sort of are free of doing some, you know, Commissioner Gordon copy, whether you're copying Oldman or whomever, because you're just seeing them in a completely different chapter of their lives. I mean, you're seeing rookie police detective Jim Gordon, so he's in his late 20s, maybe, you know, even though I was in my mid-30s.
Well, people saying, well, where's this English accent? Wasn't he like Gary Oldman? Look, I'm the...
No, it's funny. Well, what's funny is that Bruno and Danny Cannon, who directed the pilot, was our other main EP besides John Steven, both English. Like, so they both talk actually like Gary. And I think Danny even knows Gary and like used to play soccer with him. And I mean, it just felt like, look, we're doing something completely different. And quite frankly, I mean, as good as Gary Oldman is, and he is pretty phenomenally talented and successful, you know, what he was doing in the movies is so different than the role that Gordon needs to play in the series, because Gordon in the series is the focus of the show and needs to play that. You know, I, in my opinion, always felt like, and this was definitely, I think, what I think Bruno would agree, is like needed to be a little bit of that everyman, needed to have a little bit of that, you know, kind of chip on his shoulder, you know, young guy in a big bad world, not beaten down yet.
To have somewhere to go. You have an arc.
To have somewhere to go. That's it. Yeah. And ironically, you know, what I loved about it, the thing that I loved about it from a character journey standpoint is most of the time in most series, you see a character succeed and succeed and succeed. And like their arc, just think they overcome, they have obstacles presenting themselves. They keep overcoming them and overcoming on their way to, you know, fulfillment.
Right. Right.
Like you could argue maybe even you know, Welling's character in Smallville, right? Like he's slowly going to become Superman. But here, not only is our guy not becoming a superhero, he's literally just a flesh and blood man. As he ascends up the arc of the police, you know, hierarchy, the city falls apart. The city like descends into anarchy and has to like more and more in order to necessitate Batman, in order to necessitate like what we're ending with, which is that there is a Batman. So it's like, he's going up as everything else is falling apart, which I think is such a cool, you know, kind of inversion of the usual circumstances. So I really dug that, and Bruno's, you know, pretty much a genius, and so he was always smarter than me about sort of contextualizing it and making me feel like, okay, cool. Well, I mean, the worst that'll happen is, you know, the show doesn't quite work, or maybe I'm not as good as, certainly I'm never as good as I hope I would be. But it's not based on like my impression of a vague Jim Gordon, you know what I mean? Like there's no,
yeah. I mean, I feel the same way. If I would have been like, I'm going to do Gene Hackman, I'm like, hey Clark, how's it going? And just, you know, and by the way, Gene Hackman's my favorite, but honestly, I said, just play it real. Just be genuine, be real, have emotions. And once I shaved my fucking head, which you didn't have to do, it just that I was like, all right, I'm here. I'm ready. Put on a suit. I wear short. I'm wearing shorts, sandals, and a t-shirt. This is how I dress normally. You put on a suit and $200 or $300 shoes and a tie and give me a mansion and shave my head. I am going to be different.
Yeah.
And I needed all that. So, but for you, it was like, hey, I'm Ben McKenzie. They're going to do my hair a little bit. It's going to be in a different time. But did you feel like day one, you felt like, I feel like this guy, I feel like it.
I felt like they had all of those things that you talked about. All those resources were so teed up. I mean, I remember we shot a pilot. We were not picked up to series, you know, officially yet, but I walked into this two-story GCPD set that they built. It was got to be, I forget how much, somebody told me how much it cost, but it's definitely $1 million set, if not more. And, you know, to build $1 million, two-story set, I'd never been on a two-story set. I'd never been on a set where you could have multiple open levels and 200 background inside of a set before. And I remember showing up, and thankfully they walked me through, you know, I got to see it before I had to film there, and going, okay, all right, got it.
I know it makes
you're gonna
you
have
yeah.
all the toys behind you. Like, you're gonna have all the setting's gonna be there, you're gonna have the clothes, you're gonna have the manpower, so to speak, to like support the fact that you are supposed to be a leader of men. Like Jim Gordon's supposed right. to be a leader of men. Now you need to be a leader of men. Now you need to, the rest is up to you.
That's anxiety. That's like you're sitting there, you're looking at the set going, yep, I'm pretending I'm confident. And inside you're about to shit your pants and you're going, yeah, I got to step it up, man. I got to fucking step it up.
I remember the first shot of the first day we were in the set, there were at least 100 or probably 200 background. Oh. It was this whole scene where some bad guy been pulled in and arrested, and he breaks free of the officers that are trying to slam him in the jail cell in the set, and I appear magically on this upper deck and like come down and disarm him, save the day, and that's my introduction, right? Super heroic introduction. So it's great. And we're doing the rehearsals and da 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 da. And we finally start rolling, and I'm literally, I basically come down, you know, descend from the rafters. You know, I wasn't on wires, but I might as well have been. You know, GCPD. You know, unhand him or whatever. And I literally remember going, GC. My voice cracked. I almost tripped on the stairs. Like, I literally went because my nerves were. I was like. My adrenaline was out of control, and it was super embarrassing. And everyone pretended it didn't happen. And Danny Cannon pretended it didn't happen to his endless credit. And then the next take, you know, got better and better and better, but like, no one's immune from that stuff, and it's okay. And you know,
you can't right. let I it mean, get I, in your head. That's the thing. Cause yeah. I immediately would go to, if something happened like that, I immediately go to, I'm looking at Video Village in my head and I'm seeing the producer going, dude, you think we cast the right guy? Fuck. It just, I don't know what the word is. It just grows that, and you got to stop it. You just got to say, stop it. You're a fucking, you're good. Remember Tim Roth in Reservoir Dogs, when he looks in the mirror and goes, you're fucking so cool. You're so good. They have no fucking idea. You know, he starts pumping himself up. Dude, believe it or not, it's cheesy if people see it. But it doesn't mean we don't do it.
Nope.
I'm fucking nope. good. Whatever I belong works, here. Get your fucking shit together. Beat the shit out of this other actor with words right now. It sounds stupid, but I fucking think it. I'm like, I'm going to fucking destroy it right now. I have to, or I could fall apart. I'm not, and that's not possible.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. And whatever that is, whatever blend of drive, ego, narcissism that gets you there, like, it's in that context, it's all good.
All game.
yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, they're paying for that. They are paying to see you not. If you look afraid on screen,
fucked.
Done. Over.
All right, listen. This is rapid questions for my patrons.
Talk to me.
It's called shit talking with my patrons. Here we go. Shit talking with Ben McKenzie. Leanne P. Which is your favorite episode that you directed from Gotham?
My three soups. One of my three soups. The one with that one.
Chris F., what other on-screen project would you like to do with Morena?
You know what? It's funny. We actually have been thinking about more stuff because we're in a pandemic. So we may do something. We'll see. There's nothing to like officially like talk about yet, but we're trying because it'd be fun to do something given that so many people can't shoot right now, it'd be fun to do something together. So
I got an idea, Ben, for this horror movie. Listen, we take it's seven actors. We all get tested and everybody's together for 10 days. And then the crew, minimal crew, so it's like 18 people. Everybody is literally tested, doesn't go out. And then we're there for 10 days filming. And it's awesome. Anyway.
I love this idea.
Oh, dude, it's great. It's got, I'm not going to talk about it. All right, Tabitha. I'm a huge fan of Southland. I have asked many other cast members this question. I always love hearing different responses I get. Do you think the show had more to tell and should have been saved? Or do you think it went out in a blaze of glory at the right time?
You know, I think we definitely could have told more. But that being said, we were, if memory serves, we were told in advance that we were going to be ending. And so we got to wrap it up to some degree. And I have a belief that shows are not meant to ever die, right? Like theoretically Smallville could still be running because it's built with an engine that's what makes it a TV show, a good TV show. But I think I'm proud of what we did, and I'm grateful to TNT for saving us. And I think we went off the blaze of glory.
DK, what was your last day on the set of The OC like? You have any fond memories of that day, and how did it compare with your last day on the set of Gotham?
You know, my last days are hard. I remember my last day on the set of The OC. I remember talking, giving just a few remarks as I did my last shot, which I think was the last shot of the show, you know, in terms of filming. And just saying that the truth, which was that when I got hired on The OC, I'd been in LA for a year and I didn't have any friends really. And now I feel like I have, you know, a few hundred. And I hope that when I see, you know, anyone of you guys out on the street when we're in church, I hope we can grab a drink or have a coffee or just reminisce, because it's been an amazing time. And I remember that, you know, getting a little teary and feeling that and still believing that to be true. So that was OC. Gotham was different because it changed my life in different ways. I met Morena. We have a family together. We have a child together. You know, so that had a whole other connotation to it, but similarly a wonderful experience.
Carly T, last few questions. You managed to make the leap from teen star quite effortlessly to leading man. What decision did you make at the time to help this, to help aid this? And were there any projects that you turned down on the back of the OC fame?
I remember there were projects that were literally described as like the OC in the film. And like one or two of those came my way, you know, or like opening shot is guy wears wife beater and you know, smokes cigarette. And I was like, probably not the right move for me right now. So I would say discretion's the better part of valor there. I think I probably avoided a few traps, but the rest of it was just maniacally the anxiety ridden next gig and the next gig and the next gig, like putting all the energy, trying to focus all that energy into making sure I wasn't a teen idol who never worked again. Anxiety, baby.
Yep. Anxiety. Emily asks, what have you been doing to get through this COVID-19 insanity?
You know, wine is a wonderful thing. I love wine.
I love wine all the time.
We eat well. We cook. We play with our kids. We don't watch the news, that kind of thing.
Janelle B., what's your biggest pet peeve and what do you think is your most annoying habit?
I've got a lot of annoying habits. I defer to Miranda on which one is the most annoying. I bet biggest pet peeve, I don't know. Bad grammar. I don't like people who use words incorrectly. I'm a real pain in the ass.
I'm glad I didn't use metastasized earlier. How do you pronounce it? Metastasize.
Yeah. You almost used that.
I almost used it, but I think you only use that word really for like cancer and things, right?
No, anything bad. It's usually in the context of something negative, right? Like.
Oh, then I would have used it right. I just thought I wouldn't use it. And I shouldn't use big words anyway. Braden K., what was it like? Well, I mean, I know this question. I read an interview about the motorcycle and all that stuff. We don't have to get into it. You guys can go look that up. But about the motorcycle, they made you learn how to ride a motorcycle. Then it was a different motorcycle. It was too big and all that shit. But Braden K., what was it like working with Al Pacino? I mean, the first time you acted with him, you have words. I mean, can you not get it out of your head that you're acting with Al Pacino?
Yeah. No, it was amazing. I mean, my body just left. My soul left my body and was like peering down over me, just going like, this is amazing. Yeah. And Al was always great to me and just a pro. And
did you take a picture with him? Did you get a picture with him?
I don't know if I ever did, actually.
You're not like that, are you? I'm like that. You're not like that.
I should be. Miranda's always be like, take a fucking picture.
That's
like
what I do. Everybody makes fun of me. As you can see, if you ever come to my house, you'll see all the posters, autograph. In fact, I have right there, Gary Oldman signed my Dracula poster, and he signed it.
Oh, really?
To Michael. I have crossed oceans of time to find.
Wait, how did you get that? Did you run into him?
I've met him a couple times, and through a close friend, I can't say, it's someone who's could be my person who cuts my hair or something. I finally just, and there was a couple times where I, you know, I walked in and I saw Gary's right before me getting his hair cut, and there's nobody in there. So I went and got a pizza and brought a pizza to Gary. He's like, oh, you don't have to do this, man. And he's just so nice. And like, so then I got that sign and he was cool about it. So anyway,
that's awesome. That's great.
Last question, Little Lisa, who did you have the most fun working with on Gotham besides Morena? I added that.
That cast was so great. I loved working with Robin Taylor, who's like the sweetest guy in the world. Corey Michael Smith is just one talented MF. I loved working with him. Cameron Monaghan's brilliant, a brilliant young actor. He's going to do some great stuff. Yeah, it's really hard to pick. And then obviously, I mean, Donal, you know, Donal Logue's my partner on the show and just like a partner, you know, in life in the sense that he's just a good egg, man. And you could sit around, he's has great stories and an incredible life. And we could talk about anything. We could talk about anything and talk about things for hours and hours and hours and never feel like we ran out of conversation. So
that's great. Yeah. You should have married him.
You know what? I tried. Just wasn't into it.
Wasn't into it. Yeah. Dude, this has been awesome. By the way, you also voiced the Batman, the year one it was called, right? You voiced Batman. You worked with Andrea Romano many, many moons ago.
Yes, I love Andrea.
She told me, I was just talking to her the other day, and she's like, oh, you tell Ben McKenzie. I don't know if he'll remember, but he was the first voice of Batman, or he voiced Batman, yeah.
I absolutely remember her. I love her. Give her my best. Are you guys working on something right now? Are you doing friends?
No, we're friends, and she's also helping me get some guests. She knows so many people. She goes, oh, I'll get you
down. She is the best. She's the best.
She really is. I love her. Dude, I love this. I can't wait till we actually could hang out. But yeah. this was worth it. And, you know, I didn't know a lot about you other than I thought you were great, a great guy, great actor. I didn't know much more about you other than you always were really pleasant and cool. And I was like, it's always a little weird. And then within five seconds, I'm completely comfortable. And I feel like you opened up. And I read that you're private, but I really feel like you opened up. I hope I didn't slam you too hard, but you like.
Not at all. Not at all, man. And so nice to talk to you. Like similarly, I've always been a fan of your work and Morena speaks highly of you, and talks about making your movie very fondly and just loves you. And so I'm thank you for having me on. And I hope that when this is all over, you know, you come by the house for a drink or go out to dinner and it'd be fun.
Or make a horror movie. Who knows?
Or make a horror. Hey, we're available.
We'll talk. Hey, thanks for allowing me to be inside of you, buddy. I love you. I appreciate you.
I love you too, pal. Thanks for having me on.
All right. That was fun. Great guest, man. That was fun. Just such a nice guy. I like nice people, but he opened up and that's good. Ryan, you've been doing an exceptional job editing the shows.
Thank you.
Truly. I mean, you know, I look at them and I'm like, it's professional. They're good interviews. They're fun. You hope people stick around. You hope people tell their friends. And you're doing a great job, and you make the show look great. So, you know, I couldn't do this without you or Bryce, and I'm blessed. So thanks, dude.
No problem.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing some more Instagram Lives. I haven't been doing them recently, but I'm going to do some and trying to recruit some patrons. It's a great community. There's a girl, I just throw it out, a woman, Marissa, and her and this other amazing patron, Little Lisa, they became really close friends from Patreon, for being on my Patreon. It's like I said, a community, and they're like best friends now. Like she's going up to visit her, and it's just a cool thing. And I see the community, and we do these live YouTubes where I play some songs, and they recommend, well, they request certain songs, and I either suck at the songs but it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. I really love Patreon. I never thought it would be this fun. So thank you again for all the support. I'm going to read off the top tier patrons right quickly. Here we go. Thank you all top tier patrons and to all the patrons in general. Nancy D, Mary B, Leah S, Trisha F, Zara, Sarah V. You've heard these names, Ryan, because you
I've heard them countless times.
Little Lisa, Yukiko, Jill E, Brian H, Lauren G, Nico P, Barry I, Angelina G, Jerry W, Kevin R, Emily K, Bob B, Robert B, Jason W, Kristen K, Amelia O, Allison L, Tom N, Jess J, Raj, Joshua D, Emily S, CJP, Samantha M, Jennifer N, Stacy B, Carly T, Reem, Jennifer S, Janelle B, Tabitha 272, Kimberly E, Melissa C, Mike E, Jake M, Marissa N, Judith D, Ramira, Beth B, Chris F, Sarah F, Chad W, Leanne P, Jackie P, Rodrigo S, Rachon. I always mess that up. You notice that when you're
I don't know what it is.
Rachon.
Great.
It's Ray and then Chan. Rachan.
Love it.
Rachan. Ray A, Maya P, Megan D, Jennifer C, Maddie S, Tiffany L, or is that an I? Straight line.
Those eyes?
Tiffany I. Kendrick F, Ashley E, Sigourney P, Tom P, Matt W, Belinda N, Benjamin R, Lisa J, and Kevin V. Those are your top tier patrons who thank you for all your love and support. Another great episode next week. I hope you tune in. Keep tuning in, man. You know, as long as you're tuning in, we're doing this shit.
Dude, churning them out. Turn out.
Dude, Ryan, what a treat it is to have you here, though. It's good, man.
It's weird seeing other faces, I will tell you.
It is. You've been locked up, bro.
Been good. I'm gonna keep being good because we kind of have to.
That's for sure. Another shout out to my good buddy, Preston Christensen. I love you, buddy. You had a birthday and I had a birthday, and I hope you got all my stuff I sent you. And I love the gifts you and Mom and Chris sent. And I met him at the Ronald McDonald House, and he's doing well right now. Things are in remission, and it's an awesome thing. I hope it stays that way. It will. And foodonfoot.org, my good buddy Rob, a great organization for homeless and Echoes of Hope for foster youth. And thank you again to all the patrons who support the podcast. Join if you like. Either patron, Where Have All the Good Horror Movies Gone, and Inside of You podcast patron. And that's about it. So stay healthy, stay safe, and thank you for allowing me to be inside each and every one of you. You too, Ryan.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you were only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.